Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Great to be here.
Today, we're jumping into some really fascinating sources about the Buddha Siddhartha Gautama.
Yeah, a huge figure.
Right. And our mission, basically, is to unpack his journey, his teachings, the history, and importantly, what it all means for you today.
And it's interesting, isn't it, how our sources show his original idea was, you know, being a teacher, not some divine figure.
Mm.
But that evolved massively into this global reverence. It really shows you how religions, well, develop and change over time.
Okay, so let's start with that journey. The sources paint this picture of a prince, Siddhartha, a very sheltered life.
Uh-huh, in ancient Nepal.
And then something happens, these foresights. What exactly were those? They seem pivotal.
Absolutely pivotal. I mean, picture this. He's 29, completely shielded from hardship.
Right.
Then, boom, he encounters an old person, a sick person, a dead body.
Wow.
And then a holy man, an ascetic. These sights just completely shattered his reality.
I can imagine.
And it sparked this radical decision. He just walked away from the palace, the luxury, everything.
And then what did he do?
He spent the next 6 years in, well, extreme asceticism, really pushing his body, fasting, trying to find answers that way.
But that wasn't the path either.
No, he realized, you know, that was just another extreme. It wasn't the way.
So he found a different path.
Exactly. He discovered what's called the middle way.
Okay.
A balance, not indulgence, not harsh deprivation. And then at 35, meditating under that famous papal tree in Bodh Gaya.
That's when it happened.
That's when he attained enlightenment, became the Buddha, the awakened one. And he didn't just keep it to himself.
No.
No, he spent the next, what, 45 years teaching, sharing his insights, building the community, the Sangha.
45 years?
Yeah.
That's dedication.
It really is. And the core of it all, his wisdom, boils down to the Four Noble Truths.
Okay, let's unpack those. What are they?
Think of it like a doctor's diagnosis for the human condition. First, dukkha. Life inherently involves suffering, dissatisfaction, stress. It's tied to impermanence.
Things always changing, yeah.
Okay, second. Samudaya, the cause of this suffering. It's rooted in craving, attachment, wanting things to be permanent when they're not.
Right, clinging on to things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Third, nirodha, the good news. Suffering can cease. It's possible to reach nirvana, liberation.
Okay, there's an end to it.
Yes. And fourth, magga. That's the path to the end of suffering. And that path is the Noble Eightfold Path.
Ah, okay. So the Eightfold Path is the how-to. It sounds very practical.
It is. Very practical. It's a guide covering sort of three main areas.
Which are?
Wisdom, like understanding, really getting those four truths. Then ethical conduct, things like right speech.
Yeah.
You know, speaking kindly, truthfully, avoiding gossip.
Appeal for harmony.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the third is mental discipline. This includes things like right mindfulness, being present, aware.
Mindfulness is huge today, isn't it?
It really is. And underlying all this, you have these really profound concepts like anatta, the idea of no self.
No permanent self. That sounds radical.
It was and still is. The idea there's no fixed, unchanging you at the core.
Mm.
And also pratisamapada, dependent origination.
We know.
Basically, everything's interconnected. Everything arises depending on other things. Nothing exists in isolation.
Hmm.
And these aren't just philosophy points to debate. They're meant to be tools, things you experience directly to, well, transform yourself and see through the roots of suffering.
So the teachings are there, the community is forming, but how did it spread so far, so wide? The sources mention Emperor Ashoka.
Ashoka was absolutely key. 3rd century BCE, he fought this brutal war, felt incredible remorse, and basically dedicated his reign to spreading the Dharma, the Buddha's teachings, but peacefully, sending monks, building monuments, stupas, all across Asia.
So his influence was massive.
Huge. Reached Sri Lanka, even influenced Greek kingdoms. But it's not just about patronage. Buddhism itself proved incredibly adaptable.
How so?
Well, look at China. Early translators were clever. They used existing Taoist words, kind of concept matching, to explain Buddhist ideas, made it click for people culturally.
Smart. Bridging the gap.
Exactly. Or look at Gandhara art, that region where Greek and Indian cultures met. You see Buddha statues with, like, Greek robes and features. A real blend.
Fascinating. It absorbed influences.
It did. And here's something else the sources point out. The Sangha, the monastic community, its organization, it had surprisingly democratic foundations.
Really? Democratic?
In its structure, yeah. Ideas of consensus, decentralized governance. Some scholars even say it influenced Ashoka's own model for running his state, a kind of compassionate, welfare-focused approach. way ahead of its time.
Wow. So its impact went beyond just the spiritual.
Definitely. Which brings us right up to today and how you might encounter these ideas. Think about mindfulness.
Yeah, it's everywhere. Stress reduction, mental health apps.
Exactly. Widely adopted, often in secular ways, for better focus, calm, self-awareness. The benefits are clear.
But there's a question there, isn't there?
There is. And it's an important one our sources implicitly raise. When you take a practice like mindfulness out of its original context.
You mean separated from the ethics, the wisdom, the whole eightfold path?
Precisely.
Yeah.
When you extract it from that whole system aimed at total liberation from all suffering, what happens? Does it change the deeper meaning? Does it limit the potential? It's something worth considering.
A really key point. So, summing up then from this prince's personal awakening to this global influence stretching millennia, the Buddha's insights, this wisdom, it really offers a profound roadmap, doesn't it?
It truly does. It's fundamentally a call, I think, for personal change, but also for, you know, collective well-being.
Yeah.
All based on understanding how interconnected we all are.
So, thinking about this incredible journey and this lasting legacy, what stands out most to you, our listener? What resonates about its ability to adapt, to endure, to still speak to us across all these centuries and cultures? Something definitely to mull over until our next deep dive.